Hello and welcome to All in IT Radio. Join us as we talk about everything related to information technology and some other random stuff as well. Help us as we try to find how IT relates to each and every one of us and what the story headlines really mean.
Houston, we are go.
So, this is the first ever episode of All in IT Radio. Your host tonight is me, Kenneth Francine, and with me is Henrik Sonnegård.
Hello.
So, tell me, how are you?
Well, pretty fine.
Alright, sounds good. Can you tell me, perhaps, why your English stinks?
Because I have a headache and it's late.
There is another reason, I guess, and that's that we are, both of us, Swedes.
Yeah, that's right.
We are bred and born and raised in Sweden, and that makes English our second language, right?
Yep.
So, can you explain to me then, why are two Swedes making a podcast in English? Why are we here right now?
That's a tricky question to answer, really. Because we love to talk mumbo-jumble, I guess, and we love to talk about IT in various forms.
All right. So, why IT?
Information technology.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
Spooky things. Basically, everything you use in a modern society.
It is a very nice couple of words, isn't it? Information technology. Oh, I just love it.
Technology used for information. Yeah.
That is true, actually. If you turn them around, I really like information. Ah, well, enough introspection. So, what is the format of this podcast? How will we do this?
The fun thing about this, really, is that there are basically no forms, other than that our main goal is to discuss more or less only things related to information technology, not so much of other things.
I like your more or less.
Yeah, I can't promise anything this early.
Or this late, as the case may be. We're recording this 12:30, and, well, that can explain some of the things we will say. All right, do you have anything to add? Perhaps we should present ourselves. I mentioned our names, but do you want to say something about yourself?
Nah, I'm pretty anonymous. But I can...
What did you say? You're a part of Anonymous?
No, now you're fabricating things. Yeah, my name is Henrik.
Hello, Henrik.
G'day, sir. I'm a student studying natural science.
Ooh.
For the most of my spare time, I work on projects as music production, web design, and other things related to information technology.
All right, interesting.
So, how about you, my dear friend?
Well, as we said, my name is Kenneth, and I have, as you, an interest in information technology. I listen to more podcasts than should be considered healthy, and, well, I'm generally interested in the field. I work with IT, like some sort of network technician, I guess, to and fro. And I also work as a teacher in the secondary educational system here in Sweden. And I teach programming, web design, and such. My main interest must be web design, if I have to choose. I tend to start projects that I don't finish.
Yeah, I think I must say I can identify myself with that too. But that sounds really interesting, Kenneth. Web design and programming. Can you tell us a little about your skills in the area of, let's say, programming for start?
Of course, you had to ask. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not a programmer. I have never said that I'm a programmer, and I will never say that I am a programmer, unless I become a programmer, of course. No, but I mean, I read code. Yeah. No problem. I understand at least simple code.
So you feel that you can handle to teach things like programming, even if you can't program yourself?
Of course. Well, the thing about teaching is you should always remember that come what may, you as a teacher know more than your students.
Yeah.
This is the first axiom of teaching. And the interesting thing is that's not always true. A lot of times your students know more than you do, but yeah, then you have to remember the first axiom again. It doesn't matter if the students know more than you. You can use it, you can let them teach each other, and you can guide them on their own personal journey from what they know to more knowledge. But still, you know more than they do, even if you don't.
At least about how to teach things, I guess.
Oh, well, true. I watched an episode of Big Bang Theory earlier, and they were talking about teaching.
Okay.
And they said that a large part of teaching is to entertain.
Yeah.
To perform and to make things interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my deal. That's what I do. I can make something interesting. Well, mostly if I believe in it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can make something interesting enough, then, well, those who listen to me, they will get interested. They will themselves want to learn something.
Yeah.
So even if I don't know everything, and I mean the basic program courses that I teach, of course, that's not hard. Anyone can learn that. But the main point is to teach them to teach themselves. And I mean, actually, we need programmers. All right, let's get off this. You had something else?
No, I just want to maybe we could to tell the listeners a little about our projects in different forms of web design or web coding. I mean, you have a lot of projects running. I have two. Even if we don't have to mention them in name, we can tell a little about our skills and what we do.
All right, yeah, sure, of course. Well, we are, you and I are right now involved in a project for an unnamed client who, well, it's the first time that you and I actually work together on a project, I believe.
It is, actually.
And you and I, we bring different skill sets to the project. We do it in Drupal, I have to say, for a start. And neither one of us know PHP that well. So thankfully, we have a friend of ours who is also involved in the project, and his wife was involved also. So together we complement each other.
Yeah, I guess you could say.
She has a talent with colors. She has a talent with Photoshop. She has a somewhat organized mind.
Yeah.
Her husband, he is a real PHP coder. So, well, he's a great asset. He speaks SQL language fluently. So he's what we would call a back-end coder. He takes care of the programming problems. I know my trade. I know what is demanded from a web designer. I know how to do it. I know the process.
You're very good at organizing the projects, I feel.
Yeah, well, all right, sure. Since I know which parts needs to be done and generally in what order, I tend to take a bit of an organizing position. That's true. And, well, of course, I know my HTML and CSS, and I'm all right, I'm getting to learn Drupal, and I actually like it. And what about you? What's your specialties?
My specialty is Drupal 2. Not. I've just started to look into Drupal, and so far I really can't say that I can feel familiar or at home in any of the content management systems available. But at least Drupal I find being a little bit too large, or at least larger than I can handle.
Larger than life.
Ooh. I'm mostly used to just code the things from scratch in HTML or CSS and CSS. So I'm not really used to get into interface and just use all these modules and things to, in the end, get out a website from it. I guess that's a bit confusing in the start, but
And that's true. That is quite a transition to go from coding by hand to working with a real CMS. Yeah. I mean, I started with, what was that called? Tiny CMS? Something like that.
Okay.
Because I thought Drupal was, well, a bit too clunky to...
get used to.
Learn. But our friend, the PHP coder, he preferred Drupal, and well, all right, I checked it out and sort of fell in love. I actually like it. It is hard sometimes. I mean, I've spent hours trying to get views to work as they should, it doesn't always do what you want. But it worked out in the end.
Mostly.
Ah, well, we're not done with that project yet. All right, we've been talking about ourselves now for 15 minutes.
Yeah, I guess that's bad. This is ending up being a narcissistic-themed first episode.
Hasn't it? Well, whatever. It's our podcast. We do what we want. All right, but should we perhaps get into some news stories, something to talk about? And the usual thing one does when one releases a new episode of a podcast is to ask the question, all right, what happened since last time? And, well, as we've made it clear, this is the first episode, so we can really talk about anything at all.
Yeah, since last time the world was created.
Exactly. The beginning of the universe until now, has anything happened? If you don't mind me starting, I could mention what I did yesterday.
Yeah, go ahead.
On my main computer at the moment, I am running Kubuntu. That's the KDE version of the Ubuntu Linux distribution.
All right.
And there was a new release yesterday.
Okay. Yesterday?
11.04. Yeah, it was yesterday.
But it wasn't the...
No, wait. What day is it today?
It's...
Yes, it was yesterday. It was.
28th. But wasn't Ubuntu released before?
Nope. Simultaneously, I believe.
Okay, yeah.
I think it was at the same time. Some of the other projects, they tend to be released a couple of days or a few weeks later, but Kubuntu is such a large part of the Ubuntu community that it actually gets released on the same day.
Yeah.
So, well, I tried to upgrade. I read a statement from Mark Shuttleworth, the CEO and owner of Canonical, who produces Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, users first. Yesterday marked the biggest leap forward in a mission that Ubuntu has ever taken. We brought something new to the very core of the user experience of the free platform, Unity.
Mm.
This has been something on the lips of everyone in the Linux community for the last, well, 6 months or something like that, that Ubuntu has switched from GNOME desktop to Unity.
Okay.
And a friend of ours tweeted earlier today. No, yesterday was, actually. He upgraded to Ubuntu 11.04.
Yeah.
And he said, it took some time for me to find the system settings, but it was in the upper right corner under the shutdown options. Actually, it's not that interesting. KDE is a much better system. But I had quite a few problems. I tried to upgrade, and it downloaded all the packages, and then it broke.
Nice.
Exactly. I don't know how familiar you are with the package management system in Kubuntu and Ubuntu. It's Debian-based, it's apt package manager. And apt breaks... All right, go on.
I just want to say, did you notice how you pronounced Ubuntu and Kubuntu in Swedish?
I did.
You said Ubuntu and Kubuntu.
All right. Might be right.
Like a little Norwegian.
All right, but that's... Do you know why I did that? I believe it's since... My name is Linus Torvalds, and I pronounce Linux as Linux. I mean, I've been using Linux since that actually was the first test sound that you heard when you got your sound card configured on a Red Hat system.
Way before my time.
Oh, yes. Well, you were born, actually, but you weren't using any Linux system. Oh, well, anyway.
Yeah.
When an apt system gets broken, it's not a good thing. because apt usually manages to handle any situation. So
yeah,
I was a bit perplexed and I tried to Google the problem. I found that there actually was some kind of bug related to it. And however I tried, I couldn't get apt to work. Couldn't get it to get over this hurdle. So
is this just a rumor? But I've heard talk about that 11.04 releases mostly are more stable than the 10 releases in October. Is it true?
It was true, but it isn't true anymore, I would say.
Okay, how come?
Well, there are some releases that are more stable than others of Ubuntu and Kubuntu.
Yeah.
And those are the LTS releases, long-time support releases.
Okay.
Those are more stable. And usually, for some reason, they happen to be the 04 release. The 04 is for April, and the first letter is the year. So 10.04 was a long-time support release, I believe.
Okay.
I might be wrong, but I think so.
Mm.
And that means that it will be supported with security patches for, I don't know, I haven't checked. Is it 3 years? Is
it 5 years? I don't remember, actually.
No. I don't think it's 5 years. I think it's like 3 years, something like that. Whatever. Whoever uses a system that long, I don't know. Well, sure, I know. It's companies they use.
Yeah.
And always that long. They don't want to run around and upgrade. And, well, of course, since after my experiences yesterday, I can understand them. I solved the problem finally by going to the laptop, downloading the latest Kubuntu 11.04, and simply installed over the broken system I had.
And it worked?
Yeah, sure, of course. Not a problem. I created a bootable USB stick and booted from it. Installed. Mm-hmm. Not a problem. I kept my home partition.
Yeah.
So all my files remained. I didn't format the partition with the system on. I just installed over it. I have never done this before. I didn't know if it would work or not. So I was a bit worried, but it worked perfectly. All the config files, everything, it just worked. So I got a brand new system. It was great.
Isn't it nice when things just work?
Oh, it is. And I have to point out that this was, well, it was an exception from the rules, since I have upgraded a lot of machines.
Yeah.
And my last main machine I upgraded, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, different Kubuntu releases.
Mm.
And not a hitch, not a problem, never. So, well, this was an exception.
Well, I've been using Kubuntu since, well, a year, you could say. Mostly I use Windows, as you know, but that's because, sadly, most of the programs I use only work in the Windows environment. But I've been using 3 different versions of Kubuntu, it must be, and I have had difficulties with all of them. Every single one of them has been at least one problem or more. And I really can't say, is it me or is it... What is it?
It's you. It must be you. I have never had any such problems.
Hmm.
Well, all right, that's not true. I have had problems. But I deal with my problems.
But things like that seem to turn me off using Linux. Just because, yeah, I find the GUI nice and I really like the environment in Linux, but I really can't see any pros with switching over 100% to using Linux.
Stability, security.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can live without that.
All right.
Who needs backup? But really, every time I open that operating system, at least something tends to get broken. And I have to spend hours and hours and late nights and Google it and trying to find a solution to this problem. And in the end, I mostly end up doing this, or I have to, as most of the times, call you or somebody else who is home in the system.
Who knows what they're doing?
You could say that, yes, but I try to avoid it.
All right.
But yeah,
you have to realize you're new at this.
Yeah, I know.
Everything's hard in the beginning.
Is it?
I think so. Yes.
is eating...
Look at babies, they cry when they come out. Of course it's hard.
Aww. Yeah, eating cupcakes is hard. If you're not used to it. what did we talk about before this? Oh yeah, Q1-2. But what's new in the April release then?
Oh well, that's a good question actually. We talked about Ubuntu switching to the Unity interface.
Yeah.
And Kubuntu, well, you know, I haven't actually noticed anything yet.
They just rebranded the old October release.
All right. There might be an explanation for this, because I have added extra repositories to get the backports for Kubuntu. So I always have the latest release of KDE.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the things that I change when a new release of Kubuntu rolls out. But the thing is, KDE has become quite stable, and there are not that many changes between the versions. Of course, well, if I really actually tried to find something new, I guess I would find it, but I don't know. It's more polished. It's the little things that has gotten better, but I can't put my finger on anything. The system feels a bit snappier, and actually there was a bug that has been very hard for me to track down. It was a very strange bug.
Okay.
When I noticed this most pronounced when I was surfing the web, sometimes the screen would not update. So I would click a link, for example, and nothing would happen.
The screen froze?
And then sort of, sure. Nothing at all seemed to happen. And I wonder, why doesn't the link work? And then I noticed when I move the scroll wheel on the mouse that suddenly the whole screen updates and the web page had loaded in the background, but the screen hadn't refreshed.
Okay, was it the whole screen or was it the...
No, whole screen. Okay. The web page thing was just an example. It's the same with any program. Very strange bug. And I've tried to report this bug, actually. I've read about similar bugs, but didn't quite find the one that explained what I just explained to you. So I gave up. But it seems to be fixed now.
Hmm.
I have to update the laptop as well. It's very frustrating to work on it when you don't know if page has been updated or not. Oh, well. All right, should we talk about something else, perhaps?
Yeah, I don't really find this interesting anymore.
Thank you.
You and your little problems. But yeah, I read something just before. And apparently Oracle now release OpenOffice and say that they believe that this product would be best managed, as they say, by an organization focused on serving that broad constituency on a non-commercial basis.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Apparently, OpenOffice.org is becoming exactly the same as LibreOffice free and under a different name.
It's wonderful. I really love this.
But I really can't see the big deal. LibreOffice, the Document Foundation, took the source code and released it under GNU, I believe. If I'm saying wrong, you have to correct me. Was it GNU?
You mean GPL?
GPL, yeah.
Well, sure, OpenOffice.org has been... Hasn't it been GPL all the time? I don't know. Good question. I always guess it was.
But what was the big deal with the Document Foundation? Why were they releasing the same Office suite under a new name?
Sweet. Right. Well, all right. Let me quickly recapitulate the story of OpenOffice. Sun Microsystems, they needed an office suite. So they went to Microsoft, asked how much for an office suite, licenses for Microsoft Office, and Microsoft said $1,100 billion. I don't know, a lot of money.
Yeah.
And Sun scratched its collective head and said, well, we can't pay that. It's not worth it. And they noticed a small company known as Star... something, I don't remember.
Battle Galactica.
Probably. And they had their own office suite, known as Star Office. So Sun simply said, we buy you. So they bought the company and distributed Star Office among its employees. And then they had to scratch their head again. What do we do with this office suite now that our needs are filled? So they released it. They said openoffice.org, GPL. Yeah. I checked that, right? It says it's GPL, LGPL version 3, as far as I can see. I'm looking at the openoffice.org website. So they released it and said to the community, please join in. Let us make openoffice.org the best office suite ever. And Sun has always had a firm grip on the development, but there has always been appreciation of developers from other places.
Yeah.
And as we know, Oracle bought Sun. And Oracle is one of those big evil companies, and they didn't really appreciate the community. So they brought OpenOffice.org even closer to their heart, and all the developers said, all right, we don't like this. We don't like working for Oracle. They don't treat us well. So they left. They forked it. Well, actually, they didn't fork OpenOffice.org. They adopted an already existing fork, if I have understood this correctly. I believe it was OpenSUSE, OpenSUSE, and Novell that had some sort of fork of OpenOffice with better support for Microsoft Office documents and stuff like that. Yeah. I might be making all of this up, but I've heard something to that effect. And all the developers from OpenOffice.org, they moved over there, and they renamed it, rebranded it LibreOffice. So LibreOffice has seen a lot of development in the last few months and has really, well, exploded. It has gotten a lot better. They have removed a lot of the crud in the code, which OpenOffice has always been slowed down by.
Yeah.
So, well, sure, it was a good thing. And as you said, now Oracle has approached, well, no, they haven't approached the community, but they have left a message for the community and says, well, OpenOffice.org doesn't really work as a project managed by us. Probably better with some sort of foundation on a non-commercial basis, which is what the community has wanted all the time.
Yeah.
So the question is now, I've seen comments on the web. People say, well, who cares? Doesn't matter. We have LibreOffice. It's better. But I would say,
isn't OpenOffice.org now more or less the same thing as LibreOffice? I mean, I use LibreOffice since it was released. And I'm really happy with the Office suite. But, yeah, I'm tired. But I really don't now see the point. But if they release OpenOffice.org free for a foundation to take care of with non-commercial interest, why couldn't OpenOffice.org and LibreOffice simply merge now? I mean, is there some reasons for these two very similar office suites to go different directions? Or should they join up and work in the same direction?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? As I've clearly stated, I'm not a developer, and I especially do not claim to have any insight into the OpenOffice.org development, but what I've heard is that LibreOffice has left OpenOffice.org in the dust. They have really made some strides there. But what I think is really valuable in OpenOffice.org is the brand name.
It's larger than LibreOffice.
Well, of course it is. I mean, LibreOffice is young compared to OpenOffice.org. And schools have adopted and companies have adopted OpenOffice.org. They don't know what LibreOffice is. They don't know why they should change again to a new office suite. Even if it's basically the same thing, they don't understand that. Ordinary people don't do.
No, that is actually a point.
So, I mean, if Oracle is prepared to let the trademark of OpenOffice.org go, well, take it. Rebrand LibreOffice, OpenOffice.org, throw away all the old code, and continue forward. Everybody's happy.
Yeah, but Yeah, I can't hesitate to go back to this thought that I really think that what can they lose on joining up? I mean, yeah, the brand name, openoffice.org, obviously. But can't you, like, make them different subversions or something for different kind of needs? Like LibreOffice for private home users, sort of, and openoffice.org more aimed at companies and schools or something like that.
All right, interesting.
That's the thought I have. But yeah, I can see it get confusing with the names, at least. If we say they join up and more or less make these different office suites the same thing and aim LibreOffice at private persons and OpenOffice.org at companies. That might be a con of this, my thought.
All right, I haven't thought about that. Well, what I've heard is that OpenOffice.org and, of course, LibreOffice to some extent, yeah, is a horrible, horrible mess. The code base is, well, it's almost impossible to maintain.
Okay.
Which is some of the things they have tried to mend in LibreOffice. They have tried to cut off the old fat that they don't need anymore. There are things there that stems back to the StarOffice time. And of course, don't forget, StarOffice is still, at least I think so, Sun always kept StarOffice around. And they kept working on StarOffice and OpenOffice.org simultaneously. So Sun was doing exactly what you say. They sold StarOffice to companies.
Okay.
But the Office suite that actually got the momentum and found its way into companies and municipalities and stuff like that, that was OpenOffice.
Yeah.
I don't see a real benefit to maintaining two brands. And that is quite a good question. Whatever happened to StarOffice? What has Oracle done with that? That's interesting. I mean, when they bought Sun, they must still fulfill the contracts Sun had with other companies to support and continue to give updates, security updates and such to those who have bought StarOffice. That's interesting. I have no idea. But I believe that the best thing would be to keep the changes in LibreOffice and just adopt the name. Reclaim the brand. When I say the brand, I mean the name, not the branding. Because I really think that the icons and the look of LibreOffice is better than OpenOffice.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
They did something right there.
Yeah, the whole LibreOffice experience, in my opinion, it feels much smoother, lighter, fresh, more simpler to use, more easy to adopt. If you say you come from Microsoft Office and want to switch to a free alternative, I find LibreOffice easier to cope with than OpenOffice.org was for me.
And you are a bit picky with the programs you use.
Indeed, I am.
No offense, but you are.
Yeah.
All right, should we move on, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so.
I think we've beaten that horse into the ground, as the saying doesn't go. All right, what's next on the agenda? What should we talk about?
Well, I found something about... The topic is Ride the Firefox Development Wave with Aurora Pre-Release Builds.
Right, that was an Ars Technica
article. Honestly, I have no idea what that means.
Well, that sounds great.
Because I'm not don't know so much about the development of Firefox. I just wait for the sharp releases and then use them.
Oh, you do that, do you? Don't you try out the betas?
No, I tend to avoid the betas. When the first Firefox 4 beta came out, yeah, I downloaded it and tried it, and I think I kept it up to beta 3 or 4. But I found it to be a bit too buggy for me when I worked on different web projects. It kept crashing for different reasons, and things like Firebug and Adblock and other things just won't work for me.
No, all right.
I don't really get why I experience all these bugs and you don't, but ever since then I tend to just go for the sharp releases. So right. I think this is more of your subject. Please, enlighten me.
Well, all right. I've tried different versions of Firefox. I've actually run the nightly updates for some time. Yeah. Not right now, but I did. And, well, as a web designer, I like to see what's coming.
What's cutting edge.
Exactly, what's on the horizon. And I can admit that since Firefox 4, I haven't felt that as strongly. Because everything that's exciting already is in Firefox 4. Now, Mozilla Foundation has said that they will release, I don't remember, it was something ridiculous, like version 5, 6 or 7.
Yeah, I think every third month or something. So in when was 4 released in March, so the next would be in July, I think.
It actually says here in the Ars Technica article, 3 more major Firefox releases this year, bringing the open source web browser's version number up to 7.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. But sure, but
I think that could be a good thing for the development. Because if you look at Chrome, which I think is a bit silly, actually, if you look at the version numbers.
Chrome is up into contrast, version 11, right?
Yeah, in contrast of how long Chrome has existed, I think that's a bit tad bit ridiculous to release such true. Many versions in such short time. But if you get sharp versions out quick and focus more on getting these big updates out sharp and stable and clean for the people who use it, I think partially it will be used more as a web browser by far more people, and the interest for the web browser will continue to be strong and high, at least with the web developers, they who develop websites, of course, but also the add-ons and different things for the different browsers. So, at least for Firefox, I think it's good to get the pace up a little bit and release these big things they say have coming and not sit holding them as they have done with from version 3 to version 4, which took quite a little while.
I don't know if I agree with you.
You don't?
I mean, all right, look at the work that the Mozilla Foundation and the Firefox developers are doing.
Mm.
They have to do the same amount of work, patching bugs and taking care of security fixes and such. Yeah. That won't change. That will be the same, however they choose to handle their releases. But what else is there? I mean, there's a lot of work going into making a stable release. So yeah. I feel if they pick up the pace, they will have to diverge more resources to creating these stable releases. If they are to have the same, well, the same clout as Firefox 4, Firefox 3.6, and so on.
So you think the versions will be sloppier or not including so many big updates as they should do if they increase the release pace?
Well, either that, either the release numbers or the sharp releases, like, well, for example, Firefox 6 that will come now this fall, either that will be rather unexciting, like Chrome. I mean, they switched to a major new version and nobody noticed almost. So either we will end up there, or they will have to put so much work in creating a stable Firefox 6 that they don't have time to do the exciting stuff.
But yeah, I see your point. But I really think that the version numbers isn't really the landmark of the whole thing. If you look at Chrome...
But they have been. Up until now, they have been a landmark.
I know.
Firefox 4 was great and is great.
Yeah. And Firefox 3 was known for pretty good things, but I really can't look at the web browser development as a thing that every release should come, say, every second year, and it will be a smash hit. I rather look at it as, I remember, was it Google or was it Mozilla Foundation who said that even if they continue to increase the pace of the release, shop releases, they will continue to get these automatic and hidden, if you so say, updates out. These small subversions with tweaks and bug fixes and such. I really think like to look at the development of a web browser like that, that even if it's a new version number, say Firefox 5 then next, it really doesn't have to be that many new things in it. But when you see the development is going forward on a regular basis, and new things are coming, even in the small subversions, I think the interest and the interest in the keeping the web browser and using it will be much higher if you see any progress in it in that way. So I really don't look at the version number as the big thing. I rather want to use something stable, something that is updated on a regular basis, and something that introduces new and cool stuff every now and then. And it really doesn't have to take a decade before the next cool thing appear. Do you get me?
Yeah, well, sure, I understand what you're saying. You have to remember as well that just like in 99, you won't remember that, but Slackware is one of the oldest distributions around. Yeah. That's still around. In 99, Slackware jumped from version... Let's see, I'm Googling it. Wikipedia says, in 1999, Slackware's release number jumped from 4 to 7. And there was no reason. They just skipped 5 and 6. Because the guy who's responsible for Slackware, Patrick, he said it wasn't marketing effort because Red Hat and Debian were all up to 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't do the major releases. He didn't do the major release numbers. He did the releases. He had the software, the development. Yeah. But he just didn't inflate his numbers like some of the other distributions did. So he said, well, I'm tired of people asking me why I'm still at version 4. So... this is version 7. I loved that. It was great. He got a lot of criticism for that, but I loved it. And Chrome, Google just rolls out new releases. They're up to 11. And Firefox is at 4. Internet Explorer 8, 9, 10. That's where we are right now.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're looking at version 10 next year, I believe. So, of course, Firefox, just for publicity's sake, want to increase their numbers. That's my guess. I guess that's part of it.
Well, probably it is. But couldn't you solve the problem in a different way?
How?
Well, like Ubuntu and Kubuntu releases, they often officially named with their work names, Jaunty, Jackalope, and so on. If you bring forward that name more than the version number, maybe it will be more focus on the continuous developing of the web browser and the continuous enhancement more than which big version number you are on. For example, again, Ubuntu and Kubuntu, their release names are based on the year, as you said, and the month they are released in. Maybe that would be a more neutral way to express how far you have come in the development of the product, in this case a web browser. Because when you brand a thing with release numbers and it's going forward, at least as it is now, when a lot of different web browsers are out there to choose. As you say, the version numbers are not worth so much anymore when they get up in these high and mighty numbers. Soon it will be over 9,000.
Ah, well, you might have a point.
Just to give a little bit heads up here, we are getting close to 1 hour recording here.
Right.
So true. That would be, we have spent 15 minutes talking about ourselves and our boring lives. We have spent 15 minutes talking about the new Kubuntu 11.04 releases. We have spent 15 minutes gaggling about OpenOffice.org being released non-commercial from Oracle, and we have been yaggedy-yaggeding about web browsers and version numbers, and in particular what we were supposed to talk about, Aurora. But we skipped that part, I guess.
All right, but no, you have quite a point there. If you'll allow me, the thing about Aurora, I can do this quickly. There is, I'll just quote from the Ars Technica article. They say that Mozilla is offering Aurora as a more robust alternative to nightly builds, with the aim of making early stage testing palatable to a slightly more mainstream and much larger audience of software enthusiasts. So they are actually trying to, well, it's not as stable as a beta release, but it's not as unstable as a nightly build. So you can expect bugs, but you will have a working browser. So they want more people to take part in testing.
Okay.
It's something about the efficiency of the development of the new version. Probably it's an idea to get more people testing, and the more people who are testing, the more bug reports, the more exact information they get, the easier it is to speed up the development process and so on. I guess that's about it. Users can expect to see updated Aurora builds issued roughly every 6 weeks. There you have it. That's about it.
So for me, Aurora really doesn't mean anything, as I even experience betas to be buggy.
Well,
I guess.
A beta or an Aurora release aren't supposed to be used in a production environment.
No.
They are supposed to... And well, you're a better tester of these programs than I am, since you get more bugs out of them.
Yeah, but I don't report them.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, the problem isn't in the software. The problem is with you.
As it often tends to be, yes.
And of course, I mean, we all have the possibility to give something back to the community.
Yeah.
We are not forced to do it, but, well, it's a good thing to do it. This is a topic for another day, I believe, since we can, I can talk a lot about that.
Tip of the day, report your bugs.
Indeed.
In Swedish, that would be rapportera dina insekter.
All right, thank you for that.
Should we wrap the evening up?
Yes, indeed, we should. So, if you want to reach us, if you want to get in touch with us, you're very welcome to do so. You can use the microblogging network Identica or Twitter. You will find us under the name @altinomit. That's Altinomit, which is all in IT in Swedish, actually. You can also use the hashtag #AIIT if you want to send us recommendations regarding stories you think we should talk about in the next episode, whenever that may be. Well, Henrik, you can also be found at Twitter. What is your handle?
Yeah, you can reach me at @warpfuzz.
And how do you spell that?
WARPFUZ. I couldn't come up with a trickier username.
No, that's all right.
One more time. WARPFUZ.
And that's Z for us who speak real English.
Yeah, exactly. And we have a mail, I believe.
Well, actually, right now we don't.
Okay.
But we will when this airs. So you're welcome to mail us anything you like. Tell us what to talk about. Tell us what you liked or what you disliked. Explain to us what we messed up. And tell us what we missed. You can mail us at show@aiit.se. Remember, we're Swedes. So that's show@aiit.se. And I could take this moment to mention that our theme music today was made by Alexander Blue. Ooh. He was from Serbia, I believe.
Talented guy, indeed.
Okay, do you have anything more to add?
I'm trying to think of things, but no, I really can't come up with anything.
Splendid. Then I bid you good night, my friend.
Yeah, and so do you.
And cut.